Hello, and welcome to Kinder Conversations live at 180 House. I'm Catherine.
And I'm Robin. We're the co-founders of Kinda, the women-led neuroaesthetic studio. We work as a bridge between academia and the creative industries, translating insight into creative projects to help art, culture, and technology work harder for people's well-being.
In this series, recorded at 180 House, we have been hosting informal conversations about the rise of neuroaesthetics, the exciting space at the intersection of neuroscience and the arts.
Across six episodes, we're exploring connection and immersion in our daily worlds through interdisciplinary conversations. Each session considers a provocation, asking us to consider new design paradigms through the lens of neuroscience. How can we better use scientific insight to fuel creativity and build experiences with greater meaning and impact?
To answer these questions and more, we're joined by a range of incredible guests from the worlds of art, sound, neuroscience, and of course, yourself.
In this episode, Catherine will be discussing connection to self, what that means through the lens of neuroscience, and what that means for well-being. Catherine is joined by Dr. Jenny Murphy, a psychologist whose research focuses on the interplay between interoception, social cognition, and mental health. So let's head straight in.
Welcome, Jenny.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
First of all, because I won't explain it as well as you, what is interoception?
Interoception is how we sense, perceive, and interpret signals that come from the inside of our body. So this would be things like feeling your heart beating, your breathing, knowing whether you're hungry or thirsty or need to go to the toilet, for example. So interoception really comprises the perception of things from the inside, and that is in contrast to the extraceptive signals that you may have heard of before, so touch, for example, hearing, smell, taste, etc.
Amazing. And why has it become such a sort of exciting topic? What is this link that seems to be emerging between interoception and sort of mental health?
Yeah, so I think To give you a tiny history lesson, actually the term interoception has been around for over 100 years. And there was, so it was 1905 that Sherrington sort of introduced this term and distinguished between interception, extraception, and proprioception. But actually, interest in interoception really took off from around the 80s, where we had this sort of increased development in the measurement of this process. So whilst interception is very easy to describe what we want it to be, it's actually really, really difficult to measure. So it's very, very difficult to work out whether how we would design a task to actually assess whether someone can perceive a certain internal signal or not. But from around the 80s, there was sort of more focus on the development of these measures. And then this really led towards a lot of research, as you mentioned, looking at links between interception and emotional abilities. And then leading from emotional abilities, where sort of difficulties with one's emotions being a very common feature of a number of different mental health conditions, resulted in increased focus in sort of disruptions or atypicalities in interception across a variety of different conditions. And actually, even from around 2015 onwards, this idea that interception may be this contributing factor to why different mental health conditions share so many similarities with each other. So it may explain both similarities and differences between different conditions. So it's really gone from more of a descriptive term, maybe just over 100 years ago, to really being a hot topic in terms of mental health and well-being.
Yeah, I know. Then so can someone please invent a new word for well-being that doesn't make me think that I'm
I'm back with an amazing sort of yoga bunny whom I hate but secretly want to be. So it's amazing, and I had no idea. Did anyone else know it was over 100 years old as a term? I thought it was. That's shameful then that spell check doesn't recognise it. I mean, I don't know who you need to have words with, like probably like Elon Musk or someone. I'll call him up. But what's amazing is like you said, there's this link between our sort of ability to sense our emotions and mental disorders. And I'm right in thinking, aren't I, that it's been linked to sort of not the root cause, but it sort of seems to underlie everything, sort of PTSD, depression, things like eating disorders.
So I'm always a bit skeptical of the term underlies, because it suggests that there might be some kind of causal relationship between the two processes, which would say that sort of your interception affects your mental health. Mm-hmm. And actually, we don't have good evidence for that. We have good evidence for associations between these two processes. I think a bi-directional relationship is probably quite likely. Mm-hmm. That yes, your interoceptive ability may contribute towards your mental health, but then your mental health may then feed back into your interception, and this sort of continues on a loop. So a bit skeptical about the chicken and egg there, but if we think about something like an eating disorder, it is quite possible that difficulties perceiving signals of hunger may make it more likely that you would be sort of predisposed towards developing an eating disorder. But at the same time, you could also say that deliberate suppression of signals could contribute towards So once the disorder has developed, that deliberate suppression of internal signals could impact on your interception. So I think that's a tricky one there, but certainly you are correct that interception has been sort of found to be atypical. And I say atypical because it's not necessarily bad interception in the sense of difficulties perceiving internal signals. Sometimes it's hyper awareness, so too much attention to internal signals. So like most things in life, somewhere in the middle is optimal. If we think about what the evolutionary benefit of interception might be, it's to maintain balance in your body, so homeostasis. So we don't want to be aware of these internal signals all of the time. If I was focusing on my heart racing, which it is probably right now, it wouldn't be very useful because I should be focusing on what I'm speaking to you all about. So it's useful to pay attention to these internal signals when they're providing us with important information. You're thirsty, grab a drink, you're too hot, take your jumper off, blah blah blah, but it's not necessarily useful to pay attention to these all the time, and actually hyper awareness can be maladaptive, so not very good for you.
Yeah, because there's a difference, isn't there? The sort of interception awareness, how aware I am of my heart beating or my stomach churning or, you know, my breath getting quicker, and then accuracy, if I know what that means. Is that right?
Yeah, so there's this difference. I generally use this term attention rather than awareness, because awareness has been sort of used in various different ways to describe the same thing, and then ends up sort of with this people using different terms to mean the same thing. But certainly when we're talking about accuracy, we're talking about if I measure your heartbeats and ask you to count your heartbeats, how close are you? Are you any good at that? Can you match your tone to your heartbeat? Can you tell if it's in sync or out of sync, etc.? So that's what we're talking about when we talk about accuracy. Attention probably is best described as how much is the content of your mind filled with thinking and noticing and engaging with the process of sort of scanning one's body and checking and that sort of thing. So attention actually generally is not adaptive to have too much of.
And it's amazing really, because we live in this era where sort of in the past, I think people have sort of, you know, there's been, you know, maybe, you know, women have been seen to be too emotional, and it's like, don't be emotional. It's not going to, you know, it's going to affect your thinking, when actually it's the absolute opposite. It's this, you know, the more we can understand our emotions, the better we can regulate it. You mentioned the heartbeat. Should we try and do the worst science experiment ever and see if anyone can do the heartbeat detection test on stage? The heartbeat detection test is a test for interception. It's whether or not you can accurately assess how many heartbeats you have. Now, the only way I can think of doing it from here is, first of all, I can time 10 seconds, we can get them to see if they can do it and then do it again and feel the heartbeat. This is not an accurate scientific experiment.
I think, so absolutely. I mean, you can all probably give this a go.
I'm going to time 10 seconds in a second. Now, don't put your hand anywhere on your body. First of all, really try and be present, be aware, tune into your body. I'll give you a bit of, take a deep breath in. I'll give them some help here.
You might find it useful to close your eyes.
Close your eyes. Take a deep breath in. As we're seeing, breathing can really help us be centered, connect to our body. And now in a second, I'm going to say go. And I'm going to time 10 seconds. And then I'm going to say stop. And I want you to see if you can count your heartbeats. You might feel nothing at all within those 10 seconds. So a deep breath in. Let's connect to our bodies and out. And go. And stop. Okay, did everyone have a number in their head? Right, now can you find, if some people find it quite hard to feel a pulse and don't like doing it, so don't feel you have to do it at all. Can you find a pulse in your neck, on your heart? And then in a second, I'm going to say go again and then stop and count how many you can feel if you can feel them. Okay, deep breath in and out and start. And stop. Okay. Was anybody close in their estimate? Put your hand up if you were quite close. That's really good.
Interesting.
What do you think of that?
I feel like I've spent a good amount of my career actually writing papers about how this task isn't very good. So the interesting one with that is that one's beliefs regarding expected kind of average heartbeat tends to influence one's perception. So I think the tricky one with this is it's not this kind of pure measure of perceptual abilities, and the heartbeat is actually really challenging. If you compare this to respiratory tasks where it's very easy to manipulate the internal signal, I can't manipulate your heartbeat. I can't speed it up and slow it down without your knowledge. So of course, if you're wearing something like an Apple Watch all the time, or you have some kind of way of monitoring your heartbeat, you've probably had lots of experience of what you expect it to be in sort of a 10-second period, for example. So I tend to prefer the ones where tasks where people are sort of required to match external stimuli with their internal stimuli, but it certainly gives you a demonstration at least to have an idea of what we might do.
But that is a perfect example, isn't it, of how, you know, and this is part of these sort of forums and these discussions, and why we want to start this series and this community is these discussions. You know, it's really interesting for creatives to get insight in how science is done, and scientists to talk to creatives, and how we ask the same questions, but we have very different methodologies. And, you know, and it's incredibly hard to quantify these things, isn't it? But, you know, or even, as Jenny showed, get down to the bottom of the mechanism behind it and why it's so important. You know, she said, you know, there's me slightly creative going, it underlies mental health, and it doesn't at all, but there is some really interesting association. So the next two questions I'm going to ask before we sort of open it up to you, because I know there's so many incredible minds in here as well, is firstly sort of, are there any known ways to improve your interoception? Because this, again, I loved, you know, how can we as designers, a lot of designers here, think about how we can design experiences, or even for our own sort of health, how can you sort of improve your interoception?
So I guess a caveat to this is what we were talking about earlier, which is what is the optimal level of interoception, and also what is the optimal level for different aspects of interoception. So when when you often talk about interoception, often you're thinking about, as I say, the perception of these internal signals, attention to these internal signals, but there's a number of other levels as well. So there's the things like the signals themselves, some would consider to be an aspect of interoception, the interpretation of these signals. I think you came to this a little bit in your introduction, but this is sort of if you are likely to be interpreting this internal signal as negative or positive, if you ascribe an emotional meaning to this versus a kind of physiological or external, I've just run up the stairs, I've run for the bus reason. So there's difference in all of these, and we don't really know what the optimal level for each of those are. In terms of actual accuracy, again, with the caveat that too much of a good thing is not always great. Biofeedback methods tend to work well. So the evidence that we have, although limited, is that providing people with the objective signal can be useful for sort of training one's interceptive ability. Often I get asked about meditation and mindfulness. All the evidence for that and the meta-analyses that have come out suggest that it doesn't actually make you better at perceiving your internal signals, but it certainly makes you think you're better.
Sensibility, which is,
yeah,
so it assumes is key.
So it improves your confidence. And maybe that is, for some people, if you think you're really poor at perceiving internal signals and actually you're really very good, you're going to miss out on an important source of information. So for some people, yes, it may be that you're not very accurate, but you think you're really good. You're relying on these internal signals that actually you can't perceive. Yes, okay, maybe we need to get your accuracy up. But for other people, it's quite likely that you're like, No, I'm not very good at that. But actually, you'd be surprised and find that you actually are pretty good. And for something like that, improving confidence might be useful as well. When we talk about interpretation of internal signals, so this kind of process of interpreting signals as negative or threatening, I think that often, at least the evidence would suggest these sort of more CBT-based aspects are going to be sort of more focused on the cognitive aspect of that, but certainly there's more work to be done in terms of improving interception. But if you're wearing, as I say, some kind of physiological monitor all day long, you're checking your sleep, you're checking your heartbeat, all this sort of thing, you kind of are probably already training your interception to some extent.
I think that's amazing, because we are entering this sort of era where people now are, the quantified self, I think perhaps goes a little bit far, but more connected to our bodies through technology, and I'll be the first to say that I'm a big fan of technology when it works for humans rather than sort of slightly against us. And I suppose there's a lot, and then in the next, this is quite nice, it precurses our next episode as well, which is going to be a bit more about sort of being embodied, being present in your body, connected to your body, what that means, whether that's through yoga. It is good. I shouldn't slam yoga. It's very good yoga. Or dance. Jenny was, in fact, her background is in dance. Or even exercise. Is it true that athletes have quite good interoception because they're much more connected to the changes? Or is that a myth you're about to destroy me on?
No. So there is evidence. Actually, there's evidence that dancers have better interception as well. I think that at least for heartbeat signals. What we don't know about that is whether it's something to do with physiology, sort of stronger signals coming from the heart because of greater cardiac output. So your heart is, when it's beating, it's obviously trying to get blood to go around the body, and a very strong heart is beating less. It's beating less frequently because it's powerful enough. Whereas if your heartbeat is weaker, it tends to be faster and more fluttery. So athletes tend to have lower resting heartbeats and therefore stronger internal signals. So we don't know how much is to do with the signals themselves versus the perception of those signals. And that's kind of, maybe you'd say, well, why do we care? In your everyday life, your perceptual ability is a product of, the strength of the signal and how well you can perceive it. But actually, you know, if we want to go back to something like training interception, kind of knowing where these differences are actually coming from does become quite important. But yes, there is some evidence to suggest that sort of physical activity relates to interceptive ability.
Which is amazing, really, you know, and I think it's, again, it's this, you know, come back to the body and the breath as well. You know, I trained as a breathwork practitioner because I was so interested in how the breath is this interface we have with our nervous system. If you see reality through your nervous system and your nervous system is shot to pieces or hyper alert, then the only quick fix that I have actively right now of calming my nervous system and therefore changing in a way the reality as I perceive it is through breath work. And, you know, we've been working with an amazing visual artist, Marshmallow Laser Feast, a collective of artists looking at, they have a new experience called Evolver, which is worth checking out, where you go inside the body. And just an example of how sort of this comes together in design practices, we've been looking at interoception and how when you go into the VR world through a beating pulse around you and a poem read by an amazing Cate Blanchett induces your breathing to a certain rhythm to see perhaps if that can help us connect to our body and that sort of through that link of sort of interoception. And that's, you know, we're not producing a piece, or they're not producing a piece on interoception, but that's how the sort of science can start to inform how you build sort of creative experiences. The one thing I wanted to say, that seeing as you're here, it's a myth bust for me. So is it true, and I can't remember where I read this, actually, is it Sarah Garfinkel, a study to say that interoceptive ability, so people who are better at interoception, because it's slightly linked to intuition, and I'm going to say slightly associated with, people with higher interoception, oil traders on the trading floor with higher interoception made more money and lasted longer. Is that true?
Yes, that was a paper by Sarah Garfinkel, well remembered. Yeah, so this was looking at traders versus non-traders in terms of interoceptive ability, and that was using a variety of different kind of heartbeat perception tasks, and they found, I believe, that traders were more accurate, but the degree of their interceptive ability related to their sort of profit versus loss sheet from the previous year. So this, I think they interpreted as this kind of basis of gut feelings. So when decisions are, I mean, there's kind of differences. There's this idea of a hot route of decision making versus a cold route of decision making. So hot route being I need to make a quick decision, gut feelings, versus the cold route, more deliberate weighing up of the options. And in some professions, for example, this is a good example, these decisions might have to be fairly quick and off the mark. And so for that, you are sort of more likely to be relying on this hot route. And the idea is that, or at least the evidence is consistent with this idea that physiological bodily signals are going to be useful in providing you information regarding, you know, intuition. And this is based on, I think it was Damasio's idea, so somatic marker theory, this idea that you remember the consequences of reward and kind of punishment. So you're kind of storing these representations of your bodily states when something positive happened versus when it didn't, and then in the future use that for your decision making. But the evidence is a bit in terms of maybe the broader aspects of that, but certainly I think an interesting idea.
I like the term that the evidence is a bit it's my kind of science. Thank you. So what can I sum up now? I'm going to ask you one last question in a second, just about your amazing work that you're doing right now, because I think that definitely needs airing. So this is, and then I'm going to open it up to the floor and then set you all to network furiously with each other so that we can build an army of interdisciplinary scientists and artists who will change the world for good. So to sum up, really, so this is how this series is going to go. We're going to talk a bit through the lenses of connection to some amazing scientists. We're also amazing creatives are going to be up here, put on the hot seat, to basically help you just inform your own ideas about how you're living your life, but your own work. Because, you know, everyone in this room is either somehow a creative or a scientist, and often so crosses the two. You know, understanding about things like interoception, you know, it might not directly influence your next pitch as a creative, but what it's going to do is help you understand how as humans we interact with the world around us. Therefore, how can we change the world around us to support us as humans. So before I open up to the floor, I'm going to ask you just to talk about the work you're doing right now around women, because I think this is really interesting and important. And you need to tell
the world. Sure. Well, so what's what I guess sometimes science goes against your intuition, what you would predict. And I certainly, if I would have placed a bet, I would have said that women would have better interception than men. But that is the opposite.
It's annoying, right?
Of what was found. Yeah. So consistently across a number of different tasks, I kept finding that the women in my sample were scoring significantly lower than the men. But yet women were reporting paying more attention to these internal signals than men. So this kind of led towards more investigation of this separation between attention and accuracy. So just because you pay a lot of attention to internal signals doesn't mean that you're good at perceiving them. And we've done a lot of work surveying the literature where we sort of combine data from lots of different studies to see whether this is a consistent finding. And it does appear to be fairly robust that women are sort of scoring lower on these measures. And so this kind of led towards me thinking, well, what could underlie this? Why is this pattern coming through in the data? And there's a number of different theories, and I won't bore you with all of them, but the one that I'm focusing on at the moment, it's this idea that women's bodies simply are changing more. The internal signals are less predictable and therefore more difficult to perceive. And so I've recently received a grant to look at interception across the menstrual cycle, and in the future hope to be looking in pregnancy and also in menopause to really think about how sort of changes in the stability of the bodily environment may be sort of relating to one's ability to use these signals adequately, and whether we can intervene to kind of support this.
Amazing.
At least during those periods.
Thank you. So Dr. Jenny Murphy, thank you, Jenny. Your work is so incredible and it's so cutting edge. Like, it really is. This is the forefront of science right here. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Max Mann, for having us here at 180 House. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you to our guest, Dr. Jenny Murphy, for explaining so clearly what interoception is, providing us tangible ways we can better connect to ourselves, and helping us understand the huge well-being benefits that can follow. And of course, thank you to 180 House for hosting this session.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of Kinda Conversations. You can find out more about the work of our studio and sign up to our newsletter at kindastudios.com.
If you've enjoyed this, please share. And of course, please subscribe so you know when more episodes are released. We also like ratings and comments too.
See you next time.